Yes, so on the phone this morning, we have Bronya Lipsky from Environmental Justice Australia to talk to us about AGL, the power company, who are possibly getting ready to cut and run and leave some pretty major cleanup projects behind. So welcome, Bronya.
Good morning.
All right. So, Bronya, Environmental Justice Australia has just released a new report looking at AGL, formerly known as Australian Gaslight Company, who owns a bunch of fossil fuel assets, including coal-fired power stations and gas projects. Can you please give us a bit of an overview? We'll get into the specifics as we talk more, but what's the general vibe?
Of the demerger specifically? Basically what they've done is they have divided their retailing arm and their generating arm, and they've rebranded them is the intention. And so the new retail and renewables arm has been branded New AGL, and their generating portfolios have been lumped together. Currently they're being called PrimeCo. And so these generating assets is where their loss is. It's where their major rehabilitation obligations are situated. And there's certainly some concerns around the amount of money that PrimeCo or AGL generally has put aside for those rehabilitation obligations. They've currently allocated about $340 million for four generating assets to rehabilitate and decommission those, including the Bayswater and Liddell power stations, the Camden gas project, and the Loy Yang power station and mine. When we have a look at the costs associated with the rehabilitation of Hazelwood, we know that those amounts that have been put aside at the moment are nowhere near enough to rehabilitate and decommission one site, let alone four.
Okay. So we'll get to Loy Yang A, which is probably arguably perhaps the most expensive to rehabilitate. But before we get to that, to give a bit of context, can you comment on some of the rehabilitation costs that might be associated, or what is the actual the key rehabilitation tasks at those two coal-fired power stations that are next door to each other in New South Wales, Bayswater and Liddell, and then also the Camden coal seam gas project? Because those three assets up in New South Wales will all have different and large rehabilitation costs attached to them.
Certainly. So you've got the decommissioning of the power site itself, so cleaning up and demolishing the actual infrastructure. A lot of these are full of asbestos, so there needs to be a lot of care taken around how to dismantle and demolish industrial sites that are full of asbestos. You've got other infrastructure, including huge containers underground of oil and various other contaminants. You've got landfill sites that contain huge deposits of toxic coal ash. Of course, with Liddell, you've got Lake Liddell and the contamination issues associated with Lake Liddell, including a brain-eating amoeba that didn't emerge until AGL Macquarie became the owner of the power stations. With Camden, I'm not as familiar. I'm more familiar with the coal projects, but, you know, there's always contamination issues associated with groundwater and surface water with gas projects. And just like huge industrial facilities that have the types of, contaminants and toxic chemicals and, stockpiles of waste materials that you would imagine. And so cleaning up those and ensuring that they're comprehensively remediated to prevent ongoing contamination and threats to human health is absolutely vital.
And can you talk specifically about ash dams associated with coal-fired power stations? Because probably a lot of listeners think of like having a little fire in their house or something and there's a bit of ash left over at the end. You go and put it on the garden or something. Can you try and comment just on the vast scale of these ash dams and some of the environmental impacts on the groundwater and on the atmosphere.
Sure. As you've said, that's a great analogy. We've got some ash left over when we have a fire. We can utilize that. Most folks think of air emissions and climate emissions when we think of coal-fired power stations, but we don't often think about the byproduct of burning coal. So coal ash is a concentrated version of the contaminants that are released into the atmosphere. There's a few different kinds of coal ash, depending on the process at which you're at with the burning of the coal. But basically it gets mixed with water and piped into enormous landfill sites that are adjacent to the power station sites. Because power stations need a lot of water to operate, these ash landfill sites are next to waterways, so usually groundwater and surface water, and they're not engineered to prevent those contaminants leaching into the groundwater and into the surface water. So because they're a concentrated version of the heavy metals that are emitted, things like cadmium and selenium, lead, mercury, and of course fine particle pollution, that's having some pretty devastating impacts in certain places in Australia. And there's not any coal ash landfill site that's not associated with groundwater contamination of some kind. It's having some huge impacts in places like Lake Macquarie, where the levels of selenium and cadmium in certain crabs and fish are so high that the Office of Environment and Heritage is advising that people don't eat them, or that they ensure that their consumption of these types of fish and crabs is quite limited, because it does pose a threat to human health. And so they're not regulated to world's best practice standards. Our environment protection agencies are aware of what world's best practice is. They know that they need to be lined. They know that these ash dams need to be situated well away from waterways and from communities, but they're not. And so the rehabilitation obligations that ought to be imposed is something that communities are fighting for throughout Australia, so that they can have clean waterways, so they can fish safely, they can swim safely, and that it's not potentially blowing over onto the communities, and so they're not inhaling it.
How do you begin to clean something like that up?
There's a few ways. So there's quite a movement to have it coal ash reused. It can be used in lightweight aggregates. It can be used in concrete, so long as it's what they call encapsulated, so it's heat treated and put into a concrete form or some kind of solid form and reused for things like road bases. Starting an industry around coal ash reuse is certainly going to go some way to remove that coal ash out of the ground. One of the other ways is to move it into an appropriately engineered site well away from where they're currently situated. And unfortunately, like with any waste material, if you're not going to reuse it, it is actually going to just sit there in the environment. And so if it's going to sit there, if there's not going to be a reuse market, then you need to ensure that it's in an appropriately engineered landfill site so that it's not posing a risk to the environment or to human health.
That sounds like a vast job. Like, you'd have to almost build a dedicated railway to rail millions and millions of tons of this contaminated material to whatever that alternative location ends up being.
Well, certainly, or you can construct it in the same area and not have those transport risks associated with it. But certainly, in order to ensure that you've got an engine, like a properly situated site, you need to do some research into where that is. In places like Latrobe Valley, there's probably areas where you could do it, and certainly in the Hunter and on the Central Coast as well. But building recycling facilities or reuse facilities right next to the ash dumps is an appropriate response as well. So really where we need to make sure that the power station operators and the governments are working together to ensure that there's a reuse market and that there's a political will to ensure that environmental justice is achieved in communities where these things are and that the environment is going to be comprehensively remediated. There's also a whole bunch of jobs associated with comprehensive remediation of ash dams, and we've seen that in places like the United States. So it's actually in everybody's better interest to comprehensively remediate these things.
Mm. Yeah, I think the Hunter Jobs Alliance up in Newcastle is really looking at that potential for alternative jobs in using it in manufacturing, as you say, to go into things like cement, concrete, building products, and also relocating those ash dams and putting them in alternative, safe, properly lined location. There's a lot of jobs there. It's an interesting dynamic. But as you've pointed out in your report, AGL obviously thinks that someone other than them should be pretty much paying for all of this.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have set aside some costs for rehabilitation, and presumably when they rejig their finances, part of this merger, they will have allocated a certain amount of funds for rehabilitation. But one of the concerns around a demerger is, you know, further demergers and the extent to which they might try to sell off other assets, and then you have a potential situation like you've had in New South Wales where somebody like Trevor St Baker can buy a power station for $1 million and then operate those things into the ground without any kind of commitment to ensuring best practice maintenance and operation of these facilities. So it'll be interesting to see how much money does go towards rehabilitation, noting that they probably don't have enough for one site, let alone four, and the degree to which they might try to start to sell off those assets for other purposes. I know that AGL is currently working with Kawasaki to establish a coal to hydrogen project in the Latrobe Valley, which would use the coal from the Loy Yang mine. So they've already got their fingers in some of those pies already.
Brown hydrogen, just what the world needs.
Right, yeah.
Now, another massive cost that would be associated with rehabilitating Loy Yang A, it shares a ash dam with Loy Yang B, but it also shares a massive coal mine, a massive brown coal mine with Loy Yang B, which is about 200 metres deep and 3 kilometres long. And in 2014, there was this massive Hazelwood mine fire, which points to the fact that when you finish running these coal-fired power stations, you can't just leave the coal mine uncovered. How is that going to impact on the costs of decommissioning Loy Yang A? And what are the options for decommissioning a massive coal mine?
That's such a great question because it's so complicated. The cost that AGL has set aside at the moment for rehabilitation is based on the premise that it can have the cheapest rehabilitation obligations available to it. So there are rehabilitation obligations imposed on coal operators in Victoria. They are required to progressively rehabilitate, which means cap and cover the coal seams. Because, as you say, these are such large mines and the batters are quite steep. That's quite a complicated process. Basically, what they want to do is they want to cap it with clay and they want access to natural waterways to fill the pits with water. So in a drying climate, that's quite a complicated proposition because it assumes that there's water available in the environment in the first place. No one has the best answers for this at the moment. There's a lot of people trying to turn their minds to it. But in terms of its impact, you've got to make sure that they're safe, but you've also got to make sure that the environment is remediated, and you've got to make sure that the community has an asset that they can utilise into the future. And certainly our concerns are around the extent to which water is available and the appropriateness of water availability for filling pits in a drying climate, considering that the environment needs it, farmers need it, we need it for cultural flows, we need it for a range of things. And the contamination issues associated with mine pits being filled with water. We don't want the offence to go around it and for people not to be able to use it. And it's just... ONGI and the Hazelwood decommissioning process definitely indicated that the costs associated with mine rehabilitation are enormous, and they are only estimates at the moment. And I note too that Loy Yang is intending to operate until 2048, and so there's still a lot of mining to go in theory. And so what the pit looks like in 2048 compared to now could be very different. And surely they should be turning their mind to what that comprehensive rehabilitation looks like up to that period of time and ensuring they've got the funds for it, so that we're not left with a massive hole in the ground that's completely useless and very unsafe.
I'd like to think that it's going to be shut a lot sooner than 2048. I think 2028 is probably a better idea. you've mentioned ONGI, the entity formerly known as GDF Suez. What do they estimate as the cleanup costs for Hazelwood, and how does that compare to what AGL have set aside for all of their three coal-fired power stations in Australia, plus that Camden gas field?
Yeah, so in 2014, GDF Suez, as it then was, estimated in its annual report that the rehabilitation of the Hazelwood mine itself, so not the power station site with its landfills, just the mine, would be about $73 million. After the Hazelwood mine fire, or during the Hazelwood mine fire inquiry, expert evidence said that it would cost somewhere between $264 million and $375 million. Just before the power station mine actually closed, ONGI estimated that the mine rehabilitation itself would cost $400-something million, and decommissioning the power station site would be another $300-something million. So $750 million in total, which is an eye-watering amount of money. Given that AGL currently has allocated about $340 million for four projects, it's definitely indicative that that amount of money is not going to be enough for one site, let alone the four of them, because the decommissioning and the rehabilitation process is going to be hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars for each individual site. And it does not appear that they have allocated the appropriate funds in order to achieve that rehabilitation, even to the standard that's currently set now, let alone a best practice comprehensive standard.
All right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up, but thank you very much for your ongoing cutting-edge research that's a really useful tool for activists campaigning around coal and climate to use. How can people get their hands on this report to check it out?
You can jump onto our website, which is envirojustice.org.au, and follow the links around the coal pollution team and the good work that we've been doing on litigation and law reform in the coal pollution space.
Wicked. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Bronya Lipsky there from Environmental Justice Australia.